Obama says he has concluded that the Assad government was behind last week's chemical weapons attack in Damascus, while David Cameron last night faced an embarrassing climb down in his support for military intervention. Discussions continue at the UN to get a Security Council resolution that would sanction measures to protect civilians in Syria, though whether one is likely or whether the US would act without consensus remains uncertain. I'm joined from Beirut by Guardian journalist Martin Chuloff. The American president, at least, seems to be convinced about who's behind the chemical weapons attack.
Well, he has been for about a week or so. The U.S. intelligence assessment is being driven by signals intelligence that they have picked up together with the Israelis. There is some radio chatter just around the time that the attack into eastern Damascus was launched. And this chemical attack did occur at the time that the regime, by its own admission, were advancing on the biggest operation into rebel-held territory it had launched in 2.5 years of war. In addition to that, there are some telephone calls that were picked up after the chemical attack took place between officials of the regime, which the Americans believe proves beyond doubt that the regime was responsible for launching it.
Which means that his red line has been crossed. So why is he dragging his feet about some form of military intervention, some form of response?
Because the consequences of getting this wrong are potentially catastrophic. It could very, very easily drag the Middle East into a full-blown war, which is something far different to the proxy sectarian war that we have at the moment. If it is perceived by the Syrian allies, Iran and Russia, as an attempt to change the balance of power in Syria, to force regime change, that will be perceived as a serious threat to their own strategic interests in the region. Iran has a significant military deterrent on the southern Lebanon, northern Israeli border, that being Hezbollah. If things got out of control, it would be very easy to ask them to bring on some kind of a military operation with the Israelis, which would then draw them in. There's the chance of drawing Turkey in, Iran in indirectly, Russia as well. So if this is not gamed, if people don't actually realize in war planning rooms, you know, what phase one, phase two, phase three may lead to, then there is a significant potential for spillover.
And there was a certain embarrassment for the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, yesterday as well, wasn't there?
Well, he's certainly facing a revolt of some sorts from his own party, and he's going to have some difficulty, I would have thought, in getting any sort of a resolution or firm agreement through the House of Commons when they meet to discuss what should be done in terms of a British role in any intervention. So I think the ghosts of Iraq continue to haunt British legislators. There are people who think that Britain is rushing to make the same mistakes that were made 10 years ago. So I think that's going to lead to a very exhaustive, robust a debate in the Commons, and we'll see where we get to from there.
It would appear that we will have to await the presentation of the report by the UN inspectors before there is any form of military intervention. But once that report comes out and is presented to the UN Security Council, can we expect any kind of resolution to come out of the Security Council given the opposition of Russia?
I think it's almost impossible to think that Russia would walk away from Syria at this point. As you've said, it is implacably backed, the Syrian regime, since the first stirrings of revolution 2.5 years ago, and now in full-blown war, and with the Syrians' backs ostensibly to the wall, if they are facing certainly a US-led intervention, then it would be difficult to see how the Russians would either sanction that by supporting a resolution or even abstain from a vote. I think that it will come down to whether the US and the UK and the French and the Turks have the will to go ahead without a UN resolution. They say they do, but the coming days will tell.
There would appear to be anxiety in Syria that the attack or an attack of some kind is imminent, because there have been a lot more people leaving the country in the last couple of days.
Yeah, that's true. And we've been speaking to Syrians this morning who have left in the last 48 hours across the border into Lebanon, the relative safety of Lebanon, how the tables have turned. And they are saying, some of them, that we're going to ride this out in Beirut. Others are saying we've had enough. The city is basically ground to a halt. Damascus is only functioning in certain areas. It has been a veneer of normality for many, many months now, but the threat of imminent attack from a very powerful international force really is going to tip the balance of power in some way, even if the war planners are trying to avoid that.
What kind of intervention, if and when it does come, would you expect? Are we looking at airstrikes or cruise missile strikes? I'm assuming we're not looking at military feet on the ground.
Certainly no soldiers on the ground. Airstrikes and cruise missiles, I'd say, are almost certainly going to be the way this thing plays out. They will target strategic sites that the Syrian military have used to, I guess, mastermind the fight back against this sustained rebel revolt in and around Damascus and in other parts of the country. The Americans and the British are saying that we want to limit or even totally decimate the regime's capacity to launch chemical attacks again. Difficult to see how they can do that. While there is no doubt that the regime does have substantial supplies of sarin, mustard gas, and VX, it is not easy to deal with militarily. It's not as simple as putting a rocket through the roof of a hangar and blowing the supplies up. There is a very real risk in doing that of dispersing chemicals all around. So difficult to see how they could neutralize the regime's capacity to continue to store those weapons. I do think that air defense sites will likely be targeted, some key bases as well. But the remainder of any targets in what we do believe is likely to be a 72-hour air campaign are yet to be determined.
And will this be run past the Russians first, do you think, that the Americans will say to the Russians, this is what we're going to do, it will be short, it will be sharp, and then that's it, that's the end of the matter?
Well, the messaging's been essential, and it's precisely that, and that is that this is basically a punitive measure aimed at elements of the regime, but it is not aimed at toppling Assad. So far, the Russians do seem to be, I wouldn't say buying it, but they, on balance, I think that the messaging has been so profound from the Americans that the Russians are sending messages themselves to saying, we're not going to go to war with anybody here. If it can be limited to a 2 to 3 day strike, which doesn't really change much, but just, I guess, saves face for America and Europe, who have for so long been saying that, you know, we will not accept the use of chemical weapons. We must do something about it. So I guess it's a bit of a reputational thing for them, more than a push to change things strategically. If the Russians accept that, there is a chance that that this might not escalate, but we would need Iran to make the same calculation.
Let's talk a little bit about the potential response from Syria. First of all, the short-term response, and then perhaps retaliatory options that Syria might have. In relation to how Syria can defend itself against cruise missile strikes, against airstrikes, what sort of capacity does the Assad regime have?
Well, they do have quite a good air defense system. It's Russian-supplied. It's quite old now. It's 20 to 30 years old, but it's still quite effective. And that has been highlighted by US and British and even regional military leaders in discussions past about how difficult it would be to take down the regime, even if they wanted to. And that said, the Israelis have attacked Syria 5 times in the last 5 years, with aircraft and with cruise missiles and with other missiles. And they haven't been, they haven't faced one single rocket in return. So either they've been able to neutralize the Syrian radars and missile systems with whatever capacity they may have, or the Syrians haven't been game to use their defenses for fear that they may well be destroyed. So if the Israelis can somehow get around that, I think it's safe to assume that the British Air Force and the American Air Force may be able to do likewise. In terms of what else the Syrians may have up their sleeve, they do have a substantial range of ballistic missiles, including Scuds. There is a possibility that they may choose to fling one or two of them into Israel or into Turkey. That then would invite the risk of quite severe retaliation from both states. So that would be a calculation that the Assad regime would need to make.
And would they be interested in, would they be in a position to retaliate in any way, or would Assad just decide, let's tough this one out, let's weather it for 72 hours and then focus once again on the matter in hand, which is defeat of rebel forces within Syria?
I think that the decision that Bashar would face is if he can ride this out without, you know, and without too much damage to the institutions of state or indeed the military, could he then at the end of that stand in a town square somewhere and say, "But we have prevailed against imperialist aggression, the Syrian state is still strong, no enemy can defeat us." That would be potentially a powerful message if he could pull that off, and I think that that would be probably a better result for him than throwing everything he has, which isn't much. It is basically a 40-year-old air force. Throwing that up against the best air forces in the world isn't going to do him much good. So ride it out, stand on his feet at the end of the day and say, we've prevailed, and I think that could be a powerful message for him.
Martin Chirloff, thank you very much indeed for talking to us this morning.
You're welcome.
That's Guardian journalist Martin Chirloff there reporting from Beirut.